Hey everybody, it's Kenny McIntosh here. Before you listen to the Powerslam podcast this week with Finn and I, we're going to be talking about the news, ratings, SummerSlam, the Thunderdome, and much, much more. But before we do that, I want to talk to you about some free stuff, which is my favourite thing, is free stuff, just like this podcast, free stuff. Since we're coming to the end of the summer and COVID has obviously kicked our arse all this year, we are offering you some free beer this week, thanks to our friends at Beer 52. They're offering 8 craft beers sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet, for free. So if you're in the UK, you can get involved. All you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/ITR, and all you need to do is pay the £5.95 for postage and you get the 8 beers for free. Now, Beer 52 is the most popular craft beer discovery club with over 150,000 members. They send a brand new case out every month, and each month's case has a different theme. Past themes have had beers from New Zealand, South Africa, Korea, all over the US and Europe. Now, as an independent British company, Beer 52 are passionate about the UK craft beer scene, which they continue to support during this difficult period. But don't worry, if dark beer is not your thing, it's not for everybody, you can simply choose a light option, and in your case, you'll get the award-winning beer magazine Ferment and a tasty snack, Ferment. Word of the week. I love it. Don't worry though, if you do change your mind, you can pause or cancel your account at any time. So to get involved, all you need to do is go to www.beer52.com/ITR to get your first case of 8 beers for free, just paying the £5.95 postage. That's www.beer52.com. That's beer and then the numbers 52.com/ITR. That's it. Here's the Powerslam podcast. If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm up, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Powerslam podcast here on Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Mr. Finn Martin. Finn, how are you?
Yeah, really good. It's much cooler. You know, better weather conditions, I feel, Kenny, for podcasting than that searing heat that we were having to endure last week.
This is true. Last week was very, very warm. We were struggling to keep up with it, but we got it in the end. I mean, it's not really sunny anymore in Glasgow, but it's still warm enough, which I'm happy about. It's not freezing, which you remember how freezing I was in my last flat.
Hey, give it 2 months, we'll be complaining about how cold it is.
Yeah, I'm sure it's on the way.
I just told that in your new flat, Kenny, that you've got heat in the works and you won't have to go through what you went through last winter.
No, this one is much better. The only thing with this one is that there's like a thermostat thing that it's all timed to, and it works, but like getting the radiators to go on when you want them to like dry clothes is not as easy as it was in the last flat. But I will take it over the last flat of like heating would work once every week. I'll take the new scenario for sure.
So would I.
So there's loads and loads of things for us to discuss here in the wrestling world. Of course, we've got SummerSlam coming up this Sunday. We'll be talking about SmackDown and Raw leading up to those shows. But before we do, we should first of all mention that WWE have announced that starting this Friday on SmackDown and going forward, they've got an agreement with the Amway Center in Orlando where they are going to be producing TV there through the end of October, probably to the end of the year. And it's going to be called WWE Thunderdome, where they are using a group called the Famous Group, who have done a lot of virtual experiences for Pepsi and the NBA and the NFL and all this kind of stuff, to basically make the whole arena be a sort of LED virtual fan pyro display. So I was going to ask you, how do you feel about this? Do you think this is something that is going to give the show a jolt of energy that it needs? How do you feel about it?
Well, I just love the fact that they're using the word thunder, you know, and that Thunderdome, you know, Mad Max. I mean, how many characters and events and shows did that film series inspire? So now we've got Thunderdome, you know, based on Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Obviously, it's not going to be like that. People aren't going to be fighting to the death, I don't think. Although, who knows, on Raw Underground, Kenny. I think it's going to be a good thing for the for the presentation of Raw and SmackDown and SummerSlam, presumably as well. I mean, we're all feeling from, you know, we're all suffering from performance center fatigue. I mean, it's just your heart sinks, doesn't it? Each time you have to watch one of the programs from that venue, it's been there too long. I mean, it's obviously better that there's people behind the perspex making some noise. It's not as bad as it was. But I mean, I think we need, you know, I think there's an appetite out there, and I think from most people, for a different presentation for WWE programming, and certainly for more of an atmosphere that I think feels natural rather than booked or scripted, which obviously all the people who are at WWE events are paid to be there, and they are instructed on how to react to characters, and it just feels so contrived and manufactured and artificial. So I think this is going to be what, I mean, there'll be some complaints inevitably, but I think broadly speaking, this will be warmly welcomed because it will be different. And I think it will provide more of an atmosphere. And my God, that's what wrestling needs right now. What do you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I'm excited about it. I'm hoping that it's going to be good. I mean, I actually wanted to read quickly because Kevin Dunn did a rare interview with Sports Illustrated where he was talking about it. And here's what he had to say about kind of what it's going to be. So, right, I'm just going to move past his hyperbole. Got to get by that paragraph there. We can now do things production-wise that we could never otherwise do. We're flying drones in the arena. We're putting a roof inside the Amway Center, and we'll be able to project content onto the roof. So when a big star like Drew McIntyre comes down to the ring, the whole arena will turn into his content with lasers, pyro, smoke, projections on the top of the building and on the floor. It will be a big, beautiful entrance, better than WrestleMania. On the virtual fans, he said, like the NBA, we're doing virtual fans, but we're also creating an arena-type atmosphere. We won't have a flat board. We'll have rows and rows and rows of fans. We'll have almost 1,000 LED boards, and it will recreate the arena experience you're used to seeing with WWE. The atmosphere will be night and day from the Performance Center. This is going to let us have a WrestleMania level production value, and that's what our audience expects from us. We're also going to be putting arena audio into the broadcast, similar to baseball, but our audio will be mixed with the virtual fans, so when the fans start chants, we'll hear them. We start on Friday in SmackDown. That will be a learning experience. We have 2 days of testing, and we're going to practice like hell, then we're off to the races. We may have fans for certain entrances, standing up and cheering for the typical baby faces, but someone like Bray Wyatt, who's so character driven, the entire Amway Arena will be one big fiend dome. That's our opportunity to be different from sports, where we can present these larger-than-life characters uniquely. This will be great for people watching at home across the world, as well as the ones participating. So now, maybe I'm just drinking the Kool-Aid, but that sounds pretty exciting.
It does, yeah. I'm in full agreement.
Absolutely. So I just, you know, pyro, Finn. We're going to get pyro. I mean, the idea that I don't need to see that Performance Center air fan anymore on the ceiling is just music to my ears.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just get out of that small venue. It's like watching WWE in a shed, isn't it? I mean, it's just like, we don't need it.
I mean, the first WCPW show that I worked was in a not too similar size shed in Gateshead. So anyway, but you know, it's going to be fun to see them in an arena again. And it's going to be weird that it's on SmackDown before it's on SummerSlam, but I think it is probably for the best for them to get a practice in with SmackDown before we get the big show on Sunday at SummerSlam. So
yeah, I mean, I think on one hand, it would be nice if this were to commence at SummerSlam because it would be remembered more. But yeah, I think it's better to have the trial run. And SmackDown is, you know, their number one TV program, obviously draws bigger numbers than Raw. And he's, I think, their priority rather than Raw, which Raw was for years. So, yeah, I'm all for this. It's been a long time coming. You know, us as fans, those of us who are still watching, obviously we know lots of people are not. You know, we've put up with a lot from WWE. We've gone the distance. And I'm hoping this new experience and this new presentation will encourage more people to return to the product. I mean, you've got to imagine it will. There's got to be a lot of people who are just thinking, I'm not watching that because it doesn't look like WWE to me. And I think once they're in the big venue and there's all these, you know, bells and whistles, and it sounds like it's going to be absolutely state-of-the-art, full-on, that there, I think, is going to bring more viewers back to the product, which is obviously a really good thing.
Speaking of the product, ratings-wise, SmackDown, even though the ratings were still under 2 million, I think, they did have some good news in the demos, right, this past Friday?
Yeah, I mean, this past Friday, August 14th episode did draw slightly more viewers than the August 7th episode. And in the demos, they're winning the night. You know, they are, you know, in 18 to 34, they're doing better than anyone else. In adults 18 to 49, they did a 0.5 for both hours, which was actually the highest number for any show on network TV on Friday. So, I mean, these numbers are not really anything to shout about, but the fact that they're holding steady and, you know, drawing as many viewers or more viewers than any other program that's on network TV on Friday night, it's not a total disaster. It's not like, you know, the Raw story each week when we go through the ratings and it's just, you know, more sort of demoralizing data about the direction of travel of WWE. So, yeah, I mean, they could be doing worse. But certainly every other program is doing worse than them on Friday nights on network TV. So this is something that not a lot of people really talk about because I think it's obviously fashionable to bash WWE and Raw's numbers. Fewer people talk about how SmackDown is kind of holding steady. Fewer people talk about that. So we're writing that wrong, Kenny. That's what we do on this podcast.
We are. God knows why people 18 to 30 are watching SmackDown, but they are. God bless them.
Yeah, I did a 0.5 rating for adults 18 to 49, 0.5 for both hours, which no other program did during that time slot on Friday night on network TV in the States.
Well, I was also going to ask you about, because we've got an interesting couple of weeks coming up on Wednesday nights, because NXT tomorrow night, as we record this, we're recording this on Tuesday, the 18th of August. As of the 19th, for the next 2 weeks, NXT will go unopposed because AEW is going to be on Saturday nights due to the NBA playoffs. So what do you think this spells for both? Do you think that AEW have got a shot of getting good numbers when they're unopposed on a weekend night? Do you think NXT have got a good shot of doing better on a Wednesday without AEW on the other channel? Do you think this means anything for both?
I mean, NXT's numbers, I think, will go up. But I mean, it's not like they're going to be drawing 1.5 million viewers or, you know, 1.4 million viewers. I don't see that happening. I think they'll draw maybe 900,000. They'll draw a couple of hundred thousand more, but that'll probably be it. As far as AEW goes on Saturday night, they're going out at 6 p.m., aren't they, as I understand it, or right after
they are, yeah, 6
the NBA game ends. So I don't know, in that time slot, that's a bit of a funny time slot for them, isn't it? I know that was traditionally the time slot for WCW and Crockett back in the day.
6:05.
Yeah, 6:05, but I mean, that was a while ago now. So, I mean, they say people are creatures of habit. I mean, I don't know what they're really going to draw. I mean, a lot of people will obviously record it on their DVRs. Is that what they call them in the States?
They do. They call them DVRs. Used to call them TiVos, but now they call them DVRs.
DVRs in the States. So we have we record on our Sky HD box or whatever. That's what we normally record our programs on over here. So I'm not really sure what they're going to do on Saturday. It will be interesting to see what viewing figures they pull. I mean, I think a lot of people, they'll add the live viewing figures to the recorded viewing figures, won't they? And then they'll probably arrive at quite a large number. So I imagine that they'll probably do decent numbers in that regard. But as far as the actual transmission live time, I would think that they'll be down from the numbers they were drawing on Wednesday nights in their traditional slot. But I could be wrong about that. It's obviously they've never broadcast Dynamite before, as far as I know, in this time slot on a Saturday, have they?
No, they've not. So it's going to be a big test for them to see how they do. So it's going to be the test of how that audience is going to. Are they going to stick with it? Are they going to go and follow it? I mean, they are doing a lot to promote the fact that it is going to be on a Saturday for those 2 weeks, but
yeah,
until you do it, you just never know.
I mean, I think in the long run, it doesn't really matter because, I mean, even if the numbers are down, they'll probably revert to where they were when they return to Wednesday nights in 2 weeks' time. So long term, it's not really that important what numbers you do. I mean, if you do bigger numbers there, then maybe it will be. But if the numbers go down, I don't really think it's any cause for concern because they're not in their normal time slot. And I think normal service will resume when they return to Wednesday nights. But yeah, on the last week's Impact, the August 12th episode, I think it was, they did state over and over again throughout the programme that they would be going out on August 22nd instead of the traditional Wednesday slot. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. But I mean, yeah, if the numbers are down, it's not a worry. It's really not because, you know, it's an aberration. They're not in their normal slot. And I think once they return to Wednesdays, maybe the numbers might slightly dip. But I think by the week or the week after, by the week after that or the week after that, everything will have returned to normal.
While we're talking about other news bits and pieces, I know I speak for you, Finn, that we obviously are very glad that Sonya Deville is okay after a pretty horrific situation this past weekend.
Oh, God, yeah.
When a fan broke into her house and essentially had intended to kidnap her and had a lot of stuff on him that, you know, made it clear that's what he was doing. But because she had a home alarm, she was able to escape and... Yeah, the police got there and caught the guy. But rough deal for her. I'm glad that she's doing okay.
Absolutely. I mean, he allegedly had a knife and was it zip ties? I think she had.
Yeah,
had
and duct tape well. And all that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, his motives were clear. So, yeah, that must have been extremely frightening for her.
Yeah, but she's good, and you know, she's tweeted out sort of saying thanks for everybody's support. So onwards and upwards for Sonya. I do want to ask you about WWE have finally put the Indies on the network, or the start of the Indies on the network. We've got a WXW show, an ICW show. There's some Evolve stuff coming up on the network. I guess the question is, do you think, how much of a big deal is this that they're putting the... starting to put these indies on the network, or is it too little too late? Does it feel maybe like a few years too late from the impact that you could have had if you'd done it a couple of years ago? Do you think this is going to be a big selling point for people to go to the network?
I'm not sure if it is. I mean, I do feel for the companies, because had they been on there like when they were actually running live events, that could have been a huge boon for them. It's like, you know, Evolve's products on there, it's like, oh wow, Evolve's got a show this Friday night or this Saturday night or whatever, and that would have been tremendous for them, wouldn't it? I mean, same goes for ICW and, you know, all the other indie companies. I think some shows are starting again, I believe live wrestling is beginning again, but obviously no one's running a full schedule yet, nor is that likely to happen for a while. So I mean, if the programming appeared on the network when they were running a full schedule of events, that would have been tremendous for them, wouldn't it? I mean, that would have been publicity you couldn't buy. That would have been just tremendous. So, I mean, as far as adding it now, retrospectively, I mean, it's all good for the promotions, because they're going to be receiving money from the network. I don't know how much money they're going to be receiving, but they're receiving money from the network. So the timing of that is really good. Because obviously the promotions aren't running full schedule of events or indeed even any events. So that money will be warmly welcomed. And it's really good for them when they finally get to the point where they can restart operations, because you've got whatever it is, 1.5, 1.6 million people worldwide, who will now have many of whom might not have had any awareness that these promotions existed before they were added to the network, who may then become fans of Evolve and ICW and whoever else, and be willing to pay for their pay to contribute to their streaming services if they have them, or the streaming service if they have one, or live events in the future. So, I mean, in the long run, it's obviously really good for the promotions. Right now, every little helps, doesn't it, Kenny? Let's be honest.
You know, every little does help. I think the difficulty is, I know that some people who were watching ICW had put up Shug's House Party from 2018, which I would love to see Vince McMahon sort of being explained what that meant. What's a Shug? they had, so obviously because Grado's entrance is the Like a Prayer song, they didn't use it, and Grado with an entrance is not peak Grado. So, and this was his big return to the promotion after like a year and a half off or something. He was away for a long time. So you missed the whole Jeff Jarrett introducing him and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, if you're going to put up an ICW show, it's, you know, it's the equivalent, I guess, of like putting up ECW One Night Stand and just not showing the Sandman's entrance.
Yeah.
And just having him in the ring. Like, would you care about him anywhere near as much? I think it is too little too late, unfortunately, for a lot of the promotions. I don't think anybody... The problem is if they'd went up 2 years ago, you know, people could have watched an ICW show and went, oh, let me go check them out. But you can't check anything out right now. Nothing's going on. So Evolve are done, as far as I'm aware. I think WWE bought them. I wonder if we covered that story, but WWE have bought Evolve. So, yeah, it just feels like it was a couple of years ago, this would have been a bigger thing. Now it doesn't feel like it as much, but I do understand that for the people who are involved, you know, the people who run these promotions and work for them, it's a big deal to them to be in the network, and I'm happy for them.
Yeah, I mean, this was something that had been talked about for years, hadn't it? Them showing footage from other promotions.
I think it's been as long as 2016.
I mean, I know with the tournament in January of 17 in Blackpool, the UK tournament, and when we saw Matt Dallas was in the crowd, wasn't he? And at that point, everyone became aware that there was a relationship between ICW and WWE. I know this had happened, I think, in October of 16, I think was when a lot of the Brit guys ended up signing contracts with WWE. So it had been in the works for a while. At that point, you were thinking, well, how long is it going to be before their footage airs on the WWE network? So yeah, we're coming up nearly 4 years, really. So it has taken a while. And maybe this is by design for WWE. It's just like, listen, we don't want to be screening this footage from these promotions that are running their own shows. Now's the time to do it when they're not running shows, so people cannot spend money on their product and they're more likely to just spend it on WWE merchandise or streaming services or future events or whatever. So maybe this was all by design. It probably was. So in a sense, it is a shame that it didn't happen sooner. But I mean, this is what happens when you do business with WWE. It's, you know, it's very much like the whole America First thing. It's WWE first. If you do business with WWE, WWE is WWE's priority, and it always will be.
Yeah, 100%. We should mention that Triple H actually did an interview with CBS Sports, and he addressed the return of Velveteen Dream, who returned last week on NXT. He's going to be facing Finn Balor tomorrow night on NXT for one of the last spots in the ladder match. For the vacant North American title. And Triple H said that they investigated Velveteen Dream's accusations and they found there was, it was just that, it was just accusations, and they didn't feel, you know, there was any more to it. So now he's back. I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because with accusations, it's, you know, I think there's somebody who was an accused person who said that WWE never reached out to them, but WWE say they've done their investigation. I mean, you kind of have to just take them at their word, right? You have to kind of take Triple H at his word that, you know, if there was stuff there, they would not be bringing him back. There's no upside to them bringing a guy back that has, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah,
but well, I mean, it's difficult. So Triple H has come out and said that. My question to you is going to be, do you think that Velveteen Dream, the character, can he come back from this? Do you think he is going to be somebody who fans will get behind again? Or is it one of those things of when there's a stigma or a sort of accusation, it kind of stays with you?
I think it's going to be difficult for him because it received a lot of publicity. He's been struggling ever since he returned. Was it October last year that he disappeared with the injury? I think it was, wasn't it? Was it
October? Yeah, and then he came back as the babyface, and he's not really, didn't really shine as a babyface.
Yeah, it just didn't really, and this was when we had audiences still, and didn't really click with audiences at all as a face. I mean, maybe he did a little bit, but he was certainly, I mean, a year, 2 years ago, we were all talking about this guy as the next Dwayne Johnson, as the next mega superstar in WWE. Everyone was saying that. And he doesn't feel like he's going to be that guy anymore. And you're right, with this stigma, with this alleged baggage attached to him, that's always going to be there. It's never going to be far from the forefront of your mind. You would think that if they're... It's a real difficult one to talk about. And you hope that WWE's been thorough in its investigation. If there is anything that's going to come out, maybe it will still come out. And if this person in question that you mentioned feels like they haven't been contacted, then they should probably do something about it. I don't know what they can do about it, but if they can do something about it, they should. It's a tough one, really. Really tough one, Kenny, to really work out what they should do.
There's also, I mean, the other thing that's difficult is that when you go on social media, it's very difficult to get a clear picture of what's going on, because there's part mob scene, there's part, you know, people who are seeking the truth, and there's so much stuff that goes into it. I think where he's going to find it difficult is that Velveteen Dream was like a very firm favorite of like the hardcore fan base.
Yeah.
And now if the hardcore fan base don't feel that they are behind them anymore, maybe that would be difficult for him. But maybe not. I mean, you look at something like Will Ospreay. Will Ospreay was obviously famously involved in the speaking out movement, but he had allegedly banned somebody from appearing on a show. He'd sort of said, I think it was Pollyanna, her name was, that he'd said that, you know, she's on this show, he's not working it, so she was taken off the show, and he denied it, and then the promoter came out and said, no, you did tell me that. That's what you said. So, but he seems to have kind of, I mean, I don't watch New Japan, obviously, so that much, so, but Ospreay seems to have kind of gotten over that. Like, it seems to be that he's kind of back to normal, so maybe there is hope that Dream can get back to normal, but yeah,
I think in Japan there'll be less interest in that. It'll be interesting to see what sort of response or reaction there is to Ospreay on the UK scene. I think that will be different. I think he is going to receive some flack there for sure, because this is a big story that's been running for years. And as you say, the promotion came out and said, no, that's actually what did happen. You did do this. You did do this thing that you're denying that you did. And he's put out statements about it, which have been very poorly worded and have not done him, he's not done himself any favours at all with the statements that he's put out there. So, I mean, I think in Japan, yeah, they're probably not too bothered out there. They might not even be aware of this, Japanese fans, but fans in the UK will be. You know, as far as Velveteen Dream goes, I think people are going to struggle with it, Kenny. I think it's very difficult, you know, because when you go along to a wrestling show, you want to go along, suspend your disbelief and have a good time and forget your worries and reality and everything else. And when you're there and you're looking at a guy and it's like, well, this allegation about him, it's like, do I really feel comfortable cheering or booing this person when I am aware that this thing has been, this accusation has been leveled at him? And I think it's really difficult. It's really difficult to get over these things as fans, especially now, because we've got awareness of all this and all this information is, you know, freely available to us. It's not like, you know, the old days pre-internet when things would happen and most people wouldn't even be aware of it. So I think it's going to be really difficult for him. I mean, I've got to tell you, with the whole Velveteen Dream thing, it's very... I'm up to date on all my wrestling right now, apart from NXT. I've just got last week's episode to watch. And because he's on that show, Kenny, I'm not really looking forward to watching it. So that's my stance on it. I'm having a hard time with this. So
it's difficult. It's difficult because you want to be, you know, when you're watching wrestling, you don't want to feel like you're having a moral dilemma when you're watching a wrestling show. You don't want to be like, oh, if I watch this, am I... But then it's when you go, when can we say, right, he did not do that, so we're okay with it, or he did, you know, all those questions. I think to your point, it's like, if you're having to think of all that during a wrestling show, it's not the best thing.
So, yeah, absolutely. And just on a final note, Kenny, I mean, this whole speaking out thing has just sort of brought to the attention of a mass audience these things that go on. And we as fans or people covering wrestling, we don't want those people in the wrestling business. Those people shouldn't be, you know, they should not be allowed in the business if people have done these things, because they just shouldn't be allowed in. They should be banished from the biz if you have done these awful things. I think that's the stance the business should be taking. And obviously lots of people won't be coming back, and that's really good. I mean, I know there's sort of borderline people. It's like, well, can you banish that person from the business for life because of this one thing. Well, that's difficult. That is really difficult. But for me, I think it's going to be hard for me to watch the Velveteen Dream match and really get enthusiastic about watching him do his routine because of this allegation that's been made. I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a messy situation. You know, the other thing I think is worth pointing out is that a lot of the accusations that have come out in the speaking out time frame, there's actually a lot of people from the past who have done things similar to that or worse, and because of the time frame that they were around before, sort of screenshots and all that kind of stuff, there's a lot of people who got away with a lot of stuff, and I think that now people are being held very strongly because people don't think that stuff's fair anymore and should be going on. So you kind of have to just be a reputable and good person morally in wrestling to kind of get by. You can't abuse people. It's just not on. So
I mean, as fans in the old days, you had ignorance was bliss or even plausible deniability. Nowadays wrestlers don't have that luxury anymore. That was the way it used to be pre-internet. It isn't now. And, you know, that's good. That's one of the real sort of, that's a moment of progress for the business that these guys and these people cannot get away with these things anymore.
Well, listen, let's move back on to wrestling. There was an interview that I thought was worth bringing up before we talk about SmackDown and Raw. Chris Jericho was on his, he does like a stream on Facebook, I think on a Saturday night, and he talks about how he thought there's too many title belts in wrestling. He thought there was too many in WWE with the two world champions and two mid-card champions, but he also leveled some criticism at AEW as well. He said this about AEW. He said, "So I like the fact that in AEW we have the world title and now we have the TNT title, and then we have a women's title and tag titles for the guys. I think it should stay there. If you want to do a women's tag title, that's fine. We need to expand the division a bit. But other than that, we don't need any more titles. The FTW title is even too much. It doesn't mean anything. Who cares? That's just me, but maybe some people care. It seems to me it's not even a real title. You just don't want to muddle it down too much." So how, I mean, to his point, how many titles is too many? And do you think that, I mean, in WWE, is some of the reason that people don't watch? I saw Lance Storm made a point where he said that he thinks that part of the reason that the WWE product sometimes isn't as successful as it could be is because there's not a one world champion that there used to be. You know, there used to be a Hogan or an Austin or a Rock or Cena or whatever, and now there's two champions, and sometimes one's bigger than the other, sometimes one's the main event and it's the other. Do you think having too many belts affects a promotion badly?
I used to have strong feelings about this. I think now in the COVID world that we're in, there's a lot more things for us to blame for wrestling's current decline in popularity or audience apathy. I think titles and the number of them is not really the first thing that I would blame for the current situation that we're in or current environment the business is in. More titles obviously does result in a dilution of the prestige of each championship. There is no doubt about that. I understand why in WWE we've got universal title and we've got a heavyweight title, and I think we do need that because currently Raw and SmackDown wrestlers don't wrestle, or at least, you know, some of the women have participated in triple brand battle royals. The name, was it Bailey's opponent? It was Bailey's opponent, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, to name Bailey's opponent for SummerSlam. Yeah.
So there has been some crossover of talent on other brands, but generally the talent stick to their brand at the moment. They are brand exclusive. So I do understand why we have a universal title on SmackDown and we've got a heavyweight title on Raw. So I don't really think it would work if they didn't have a belt for the top guys to vie for. So I think that should remain the same. That's the status quo that I wouldn't change. As far as having too many titles in WWE, I think I would probably prefer it if WWE got rid of one of the sets of tag team belts for the men and then just had like the men sort of floating from, you know, the champions would defend. No, that's not going to work because obviously got NXT tag team champions, so that's not going to work. But it feels right now on SmackDown, we've got a tag team championship, and I think only really two teams vying for it. So that feels pretty worthless. I think the Cruiserweight Championship on NXT might as well not exist right now. I can't believe how devalued that has been over the last sort of 6 weeks to 2 months. I mean, each time that title appears, I just think, oh, you know, that's changed the channel material. But as far as other championships go, I think we need an intercontinental title. I think AJ Styles is doing a good job with that. I think we need and that's obviously on SmackDown. I think we need a US title on Raw. And I think Apollo Crews and MVP, that's quite an interesting program. So I don't know, really. I don't think there should be any more belts or championships than there currently are in WWE. But I mean, apart from really the Cruiserweight belt, I think every title does have a purpose and serves a purpose in the company. As far as AEW goes, I'm in agreement. They don't need any more championships there. The FTW title, I have no idea why Taz introduced that and gave it to Brian Cage. It was almost like the equivalent of giving the $1 million belt to Steve Austin when he was the ringmaster back in 1995, early 1996. And it was just like a worthless prop. And the $1 million belt meant a hell of a lot more to WWF fans than the FTW belt ever meant to ECW fans. So AEW doesn't need any more belts. I think the same applies to Impact Wrestling. I mean, they've got world title currently held by Eddie Edwards. They've got a tag team title currently held by the Motor City Machine Guns. They've got a women's title held by Deonna Purrazzo, and they've got an X Division title which is held by Chris Bay. So I think they've got the right number of championships as well. I don't think there's any others. I think there's only four there. So I mean, I think overall, Kenny, looking at wrestling, I don't think, apart from maybe and the Cruiserweight title in NXT, I'm not suggesting that it should be discontinued or abandoned. I just think they need to put it on someone that the fans care about. And I think that situation will be remedied immediately, or at least, you know, give the guy, Escobar guy, you know, a program that's got a chance of getting over. Then I think that will remedy that situation. So I think it's about right at the moment. But there's definitely been times in the past when there's been too many championships. I think the moment was just about the right amount. I don't really have any great objection to any championship that exists in one of the three major American companies right now, with the exception, of course, of the FTW belt that's held by Brian Cage and isn't really a proper championship. Oh, should just mention also in Impact Wrestling, Moose has the TNA world title. But that's kind of part of a storyline between Moose and EC3, and he's not recognized as a genuine title. So that's part of a storyline and is not really a genuine title. So that in its own way serves its own purpose. Should just mention that one, Kenny. How about yourself? What's your feelings on the title situation?
For the most part, I agree with you. I think the one bit that I would probably say I would change is I don't like there being two world titles in WWE. And the way that I would kind of... The reasoning is because I look at like a couple of my favorite WrestleManias over the last kind of 10 years, and I look at, you know, WrestleMania 30 with Daniel Bryan winning the World Heavyweight Championship over the two matches, or WrestleMania 31 where you had you know, Brock and Roman in that big match with Rollins with the briefcase, and they felt really like big matches. And I feel like in the era of the Universal and the WWE title, I don't think there's really been a year where it's felt bigger by having two. I feel like those years there should be one. So I think that for me, I would like to see there be one world champion. I feel like that would mean more. And, you know, and I know that would require a lot more writing for like that champion, but I think it can be done easily. I think you can have somebody floating between Raw and SmackDown. I think that would make it better. I do think the mid-card titles in WWE should stay the way they are, the IC in the US. But I do agree with you in your initial thing about the tag titles. I think there should just be a men's tag title for the main roster that goes between Raw and SmackDown. And, yeah, you know, then when you come to Survivor Series, you get the NXT champ tag champs against the main roster tag champs. Or you've got the, you know, and do it like that. In terms of the women's title, The women's divisions are pretty good, so I would probably keep the two women's belts right now, but I think that's something to keep an eye on, because maybe down the line one title would mean more. But I don't know, I feel like when you get the one world champion, it feels bigger. It feels bigger for the title, it feels bigger for the matches, and it feels bigger for the promotion. So that's that. I would change that. But with AEW, yeah, the FTW belt, just, you know, put that one on dark or get it away. It just doesn't... and I know what they were trying to do. They were trying to give Brian Cage something, but what they shouldn't have done is make his first big match the world title match where he loses. That's what they shouldn't have done.
Oh, my God, that match was a disaster. I mean, it's just disappeared now. I mean, my God, that was awful. And the thing is, I think I am with you with the Raw and SmackDown tag team title. Yeah, they could unify that so they just had one. And I guess then you would have the teams would go from brand to brand defending the championship, or maybe they would just defend the belts on pay-per-view. That might be quite a nice tactic. So to just have like tag team matches, mind you, it's like there's so few tag teams right now on SmackDown that if they didn't have a tag team title to vie for, it probably wouldn't even get any TV time. You know, Cesaro and Nakamura and the Lucha House fight, he probably wouldn't even be on TV. Not that you'd be too bothered about that, Kenny.
Devastated.
Yeah, things right now do feel pretty thin in that regard. So yeah, I think that probably would be an upgrade. As far as having just a single world title, WWE has obviously done this before. It did it back in 2001 when Jericho unified the belts that year at Vengeance, wasn't it, that year in December?
Yeah.
And then they decided that it didn't really work in 2002 when they had the brand split, and then we had the Brock Lesnar went off to SmackDown and he was SmackDown champ or WWE champ, and then Triple H was presented with the world title by Eric Bischoff in September 2002. So they felt like they needed two championships there. And obviously they tried that again, didn't they, in 2013 when they had that unification match between Cena and Orton, I believe it was, in the December pay-per-view that year.
Yeah, TLC.
That's right. So they unified the titles there and they tried to make it into a huge event, and it really wasn't. And then again after that, you know, obviously Daniel Bryan won both belts at WrestleMania 30, as you said. But then they decided again that they needed a title for each brand. So that didn't last either. So they have tried this, and then they've reverted to a title for each brand. So I think that's going to stay. I think they've tried it a couple of times now, and I don't see them going back on that one. I don't see them reverting to just one championship, because it's kind of easier for them to script Raw and SmackDown if each program has a major title for the top guys to contend for, to defend and vie for. So I don't see that changing, because it would make things more difficult for them. And I think WWE sees a lot of value in having a major title or a heavyweight title on each brand. I think they see that as a draw, and it makes their jobs easier to write programming with a top title to build around. So yeah, I think that's going to stay.
Well, let's move on to SmackDown from this past Friday, August 14th. How did they do this week? Obviously, last week SmackDown was very ropey. We were quite critical of the show. Did they do any better this week?
I think some of it was okay. I mean, I enjoyed the triple brand Battle Royal. I thought Bayley and Sasha Banks were solid gold on ring announcing. I thought they were a barrel of laughs.
They were a riot.
Yeah, Sasha there says, "Oh, Shotzi, sweetheart, green is definitely not your colour." So
they're very funny.
Yeah, so I mean, I thought they did really well there. I found the whole thing with the with Retribution, the anarchists, or whatever you want to call them, I found that opening segment a bit weird, really. Big E and John Morrison were having a match. Or can we just say also, Big E, we haven't discussed this, Kenny. A while ago, we were talking about Big E getting a singles push. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, what they need to do is they need to reinvent this guy so that he's radically different from his Big E New Day persona. Have they done that, Kenny?
I would say there is still a large amount of similarities to his previous gimmick.
I mean, it's the same New Day graphics, same music. Big E's wearing the same gear. He's doing the same promos. Nothing has changed. So this just feels like something... This is just like something to keep him occupied until... That's the message that WWE is sending from this. Is that, well, you know, he's a singles player, but he's a member of the New Day still. So he's just doing this for a little while. And then when Kingston and Xavier Woods return, well, they'll reunite. So it's really impossible for us to view Big E as anything different to what he was 2 or 3 months ago. So he's already scuppered. It's already over for him. So as a singles player, I mean, so Big E, John Morrison had a match. Then the mass rioters in black costumes and baseball bats, they came down and beat down Big E and Morrison. I didn't feel like the attack was in any way convincing. Then backstage afterwards, Big E's ranting. And then the bit I didn't get was, he's saying, well, I'm going to beat up Morrison later on the program. I'm not going to allow these people to ruin my night. Surely, if some guys had come in the ring and beaten you up, you'd be more interested in beating them up than the guy that you were wrestling.
This is where the story kind of falls apart a little bit, because you've got Retribution here coming in because they want to wreak havoc across WWE. But like, you know, Nexus is the easiest comparison we can make in WWE. And when Nexus came around, WWE were so angry at Nexus that they formed a super team to take them on. Whereas Big E just didn't really seem to care that Retribution were on the warpath. Whereas, yeah, you would think that would be the time where Miz and Morrison and Big E would probably just team up for the common enemy.
Yeah, that's it. And instead, oh no, we're going to have a match later on. Well, why do you not want revenge on Retribution instead of the guy who was also a victim of their attack? So that was totally nonsensical to me. I mean, the backstage, Sheamus was there. He starts having to go at Big E. Then Shorty G's there. He seems to be acting like a babyface. Big E's trying to give a motivational speech to the troops. It didn't really persuade. I didn't find it very persuasive at all. I just think the Big E character, they might as well just give up now, Kenny. I've got no interest in seeing him as a singles performer. So they might as well just send him home and bring him back when Kofi and Xavier Woods are ready to return.
Maybe the plan is that he is going to have a different character, but wait until after SummerSlam to do it. Because if he's not got a match on SummerSlam, maybe you don't want to put the focus on it right now. So I'm trying to give it a bit of the benefit of the doubt.
No, you just need to do it straight away. I mean, the message here is that nothing's changed. And therefore, why should our opinion of him change? It's not going to, because you're not giving us a reason to view this person differently.
Well, let's talk about the Triple Brand Battle Royal. It went about 9 minutes. Asuka's the one that gets the win. It came down to Asuka and Shayna Baszler. It was a pretty clever finish as well. I thought the match was fun, and I think Asuka is an intriguing winner given the possibilities of what you can do at SummerSlam with her in both title matches. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I did not see that coming. I thought at the end it was going to be Shayna, but instead it was Asuka. Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought Sasha and Bayley did a really good job on the ring announcing, and they were all over this. They were a lot of laughs, and I think they really added a lot to this match here. And I thought, you know, Tamina ended up eliminating Nikki Cross. Then I thought Bianca's elimination of Tamina Snuka was, did you see the move she used? It was like the old Beth Phoenix.
Yeah, it was great.
And Tamina went up beautifully for it. I mean, that looked tremendous. Lacey eliminated Naomi, then Shotzi Blackheart threw Lacey Evans out. I mean, I hope that some of these eliminations will lead to further interaction. It probably won't do, because a lot of them were between people who are on separate brands, but it would be nice to think that would go somewhere. Diana Brooke seemed like a late contender. Then you're thinking, nah, it's Diana Brooke, she's not going to win. So Asuka eliminated Brooke. And then finally Asuka eliminated Baszler. So Sasha and Banks were at ringside, and they were gobsmacked by the outcome. Then they argued backstage, and I thought there was something there that was a nod to something that I said on last week's podcast, where Bayley mentioned that she'd had the match with Asuka, but when she lost to her, it didn't really matter because nothing important was on the line. And then she said that, and Sasha just sort of stopped in the tracks, like, what? You know, what are you saying? So hopefully they're going to revisit that. So I thought that was really good there. It's going to lead to Asuka facing both of them at SummerSlam, which I can't imagine too many people would have predicted. And in some ways, I guess Sasha and Bayley's reaction to it sort of didn't make sense, because you would think, well, hold on a minute. Asuka's going to have to wrestle two matches that night. So does that not favour Sasha and Bayley? And they kind of did acknowledge that. They did bring that up on Raw, didn't they? On the 17th.
Yeah, they did it.
But on the night, they didn't. And it was just like, I thought it was a bit sort of weird that, hold on a minute, Asuka's going to have to wrestle twice. So doesn't actually favour Sasha and Bayley? Which it kind of does, doesn't it?
It does. But the match was fun and there was good interactions. Now, Finn, I know this is going to be difficult for you, so I'm here for you. It can't feel great to be wrong, but let's just get through it. Mandy Rose does a promo backstage, and she challenges Sonya Deville to a hair versus hair match at SummerSlam, which is accepted later on in the night. Now, last week, I suggested that would be the stipulation, and you were like, no, 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 Kenny. No, 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 that's not what's going to happen. And you shot me down. And here we are 1 week later with SummerSlam on the horizon, hair versus hair. I just, you know, it's just a glorious time to be alive.
Humble pie, Kenny. It's not the first time I've had to eat it, but it still tastes awful.
But joking aside, so she made the challenge for hair versus hair, and Sonya accepted later on in the show. Because it feels like this is far more of a sort of hot hair versus hair match storyline than Victoria and Molly Holly at WrestleMania 20. Yeah. It feels like this has got some legs to it, and you know, if Sonya goes bald, you could see her like in Raw Underground, if that's still around at that point. do you think there's any, is there potential in this storyline stipulation for the match?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely. I mean, I didn't think this match was going to take place, because I just thought, nah, they're not going to do that. But in hindsight, yeah, of course they were going to do it. So what a fool I was to not be able to predict this one. So yeah, Mandy was there and she said, you know, you and me, SummerSlam in a hair versus hair match, it will get ugly, you know, Sonya Deville. So and then later she says Sonya accepted the challenge. I mean, Mandy cut a really quite, you know, forceful promo saying that she'd never had anything handed to her, and Sonya knew that as well as anyone. So she resented the fact that people thought that she just, everything had been a cakewalk for her because of the way she looked. So, I mean, I thought she did a really good promo there. And I think Mandy's somebody that, you know, I've got a lot of respect for, because she could have gone down the Kelly route or the Tori Wilson route or the Lana route and just got by on her looks. And I think she really does want to be taken seriously as a wrestler, as an in-ring performer, and not just get by on her looks. It feels like the stipulation feels like SummerSlam worthy, and because it's got so much storyline back into it, this feels like the culmination of a long feud. So,
and they're going to get to do this in front of, you know, the virtual fans and the kind of pomp and circumstance that they didn't really get to do at WrestleMania, which we kind of thought they were done out of a little bit.
Yeah. And it's going to be a big match for those two. And Mandy Rose has said that she's going to shave Sonya Deville bald. I mean, we'll see if that happens. I hope that they do honor that stipulation, and it's not just a little bit of a haircut. I think it needs to be an actual, like, sheer bold thing to really make this stipulation matter and meaningful in the long run. That this was, this challenge was issued, Sonya accepted it, and yes, this is what the penalty will be for the loser of this match. And obviously the stakes between these two are so high, it does feel like these two really despise each other. And I think this is a good way to settle it. So yeah, I'm absolutely pleased. I'm delighted, elated, Kenny, that I was wrong about this. And I hope that they really do deliver on Sunday and give us that proper full-on, you know, Vince at WrestleMania 23 and Vince and Donald Trump and Molly Holly at WrestleMania 20 haircut. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And now, I feel like also on SmackDown, they knew that you as a long-time Impact viewer would get a kick out of AJ Styles and his new protege, Joseph Park, made his debut on SmackDown with AJ Styles as AJ came out with a big board and he talked about the phenomenal Intercontinental Statistics System, which has the acronym PISS.
It was really funny because it almost felt like a rib on AJ Styles, and he seemed to be having a bit of a problem saying the word statistician. And I was just really amused by that each time he used that word. And he's going on about, AJ Styles, he wants to live in the moment. He was sick of hearing and reading people complaining about the opponents that he's selected for himself, and all these nerds out there. And then AJ referred to himself as a handsome stud of a nerd himself. He described himself as a statistician. So I'm glad that I can pronounce that word on this podcast. And then the phenomenal Intercontinental Statistics System. It's a work in progress, said AJ. So AJ then unveiled what's the name of these boards? Because we're not allowed to say... Can we allow to say whiteboard anymore, Kenny?
I think you are allowed to say whiteboard.
Are we still allowed to say that?
It's just the color of a board, you can still say. Well,
no, chalkboard now. Chalkboard now, not blackboard. Chalkboard.
Yeah, that one's changed to chalkboard because I wasn't going to say blackboard anymore because it's been changed. But I couldn't remember what it had been changed to. But I bought a whiteboard 2 weeks ago from Ryman's, the stationery place, and it was called a whiteboard. We're still okay. We're in the clear for now.
Fantastic. We're still on politically correct footing there. Fantastic for the first time in this podcast's history. AJ Styles had his name on the whiteboard, and then underneath was supposed to be a list of people who, according to his phenomenal Intercontinental Statistics System, were worthy of facing him for the IC belt. And then he removed the bottom half, the cover of the bottom half of the whiteboard, and no names were listed. And that led to lots of amusing memes online, didn't it, Kenny, of what was actually written on the board on Twitter.
there were a lot of memes about it.
So many involving flat earth.
which AJ Styles maintains he is not a flat earther. He just thinks there are some interesting theories.
So AJ was really funny here. He was saying that no one else was on the board because no one else had earned the right to face AJ Styles. And then I was really pleased to see Jeff Hardy come out. I mean, at least that feud with Sheamus has been useful for something. So he comes out and he confronts AJ, said that he thought that Hardy versus Styles sounded mega cool. And then Styles said that Jeff hadn't earned it and it wasn't a pity party. And then Jeff blasted Styles. There's a big rumble. And there's now going to be a match between those two on next week's SmackDown. So I enjoyed this segment. I was amused by it. And I thought Joseph Parks, he played like the timid, Joseph Parky Parks character that he perfected in Impact Wrestling. Michael Cole pretended that he didn't know who Joseph Parks was.
He's a fucking idiot.
Well, maybe you never watched Impact Wrestling. Good company man.
The problem with Michael Cole is, Michael Cole, if you watch that UK tournament, he's a really good commentator. But unfortunately, he gets so overly produced sometimes that he is made to be a buffoon. Mm. He did say, actually, Michael Cole said on a late July 2000 episode of SmackDown, and I'm going to quote this, and this is not me making this up. So Road Dogg had just X-Pac and Road Dogg were both trying to see if they could beat Steve Blackman individually, and then they both failed. And on the SmackDown, X-Pac was the one that had failed, so Road Dogg came in and attacked Steve Blackman after the match. So Road Dogg and X-Pac are beating Steve Blackman down, and Michael Cole says, there they are, Road Dogg and X-Pac, arguably the greatest tag team in the history of the World Wrestling Federation. They are not a tag team. They have never been a tag team. They have never won a tag title. But apparently, according to Michael Cole, arguably the greatest tag team in the history of the WWF. Yeah, he's been making these comments since 1999. Anyway, Jeff Hardy and AJ Styles, I'm pretty excited about that as a SummerSlam title match, if that's what we're going to get. So, I mean, well, it's been announced for this week's SmackDown.
Yeah.
I've got a feel like something's going to happen, which is going to lead to us getting it at SummerSlam. That's my gut feeling.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, it was really funny as well. At the end of the segment, Jeff ended up after pummeling Styles. He then ended up writing his name on the whiteboard. And then backstage afterwards, Parky's got the whiteboard and AJ's trying to rub his name off. Permanent marker! Permanent marker! So, yeah, I thought that was funny. And, yeah, you would think that they're probably going to go to a non-finish and that would then lead to a match at SummerSlam. Although, I don't know, Kenny. I mean, you know, looking at that lineup for SummerSlam, it's a pretty stacked show. I mean, there's already a lot of matches without that, the addition of that, that have been announced for the SummerSlam card. So maybe it won't take place at SummerSlam.
The main event of the show was the Big E John Morrison match where Big E got the win. But afterwards, Sheamus came out and hit Big E with a brogue kick. And then Braun Strowman came out bald with a new look. He called out Bray Wyatt. Alexa Bliss came out instead. She'd done a sit-down interview earlier in the show. She sort of was saying, you know, she took issue with Strowman, saying that he didn't care about her last week. Strowman said that she led him around by the beard. They have this promo back and forth. And then, you know, Alexa's asking him to look at her. He won't do it. She slaps him. And then she keeps slapping him. So Strowman picks up Alexa Bliss, presses her over his head for a gorilla press, shouting, "Where are you, Fiend?" The Fiend light starts to flicker. Strowman then tosses Alexa Bliss in the air, but the lights go out, so we don't see her fall. And when the lights go back on, the Fiend's in the ring, sort of attending to Alexa Bliss, as Strowman appears on the big screen, laughing in the Fiend style, as the show goes off the air. So, I mean, did we see a double turn here? What was going on? And what do you think of Braun's new look and his final acceptance that he had to shave the head?
I don't think it's a double turn. I mean, although in saying that, Braun did say that he was going to rip the Fiend limb from limb and consume his entrails, which isn't really babyface speak, you know, as far as I can work out. You know, in my lexicon, that's not babyface speak or my knowledge of babyfaces in pro wrestling. I mean, yeah, Braun's there. The mullet's gone. He's got a bald head. He raged like a madman, says that everyone who comes into contact with the Fiend changes. You know, Alexa yelled at Braun and she, as you said, slapped him and then he pressed her and then Fiend out. And it's like, I believe this is Braun playing the Fiend at his own game. So I don't think this is a turn, because if it is, where does that leave the Fiend? I don't see the Fiend really working as a babyface character. I don't see how it could really work as a babyface character. I mean, maybe it could, but I mean, you'd have to have a really evil villain, wouldn't you, to turn the Fiend babyface. I'm not quite sure where this leaves Alexa, if she's going to join the Fiend or not. I'm sure she will play a part in the Fiend versus Braun Strowman match at SummerSlam, although I haven't quite worked out what it is yet. You'll never see it coming, right, Kenny? That's the tagline of SummerSlam, isn't it? So I think she will have some involvement there in the outcome of the match. I'm still not really that excited about Braun Strowman versus The Fiend, I must confess. I don't know whether you are, but I'm really not.
I feel the Alexa Bliss inclusion has made me a little bit more excited about it, just because before that it kind of felt like it had ran out of steam. But I feel like whoever loses at SummerSlam is just going to kind of be lost after the show.
Yeah, it's going to be really difficult. And the problem is it's hard to get excited about this storytelling from WWE because they've let us down so many times. I really find it hard to have faith in anything they do anymore, if I'm honest with you. So I'm really hoping that they're going to go somewhere towards restoring my confidence in their booking system in this match. But I don't want to say too much about that in case they don't. Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping Alexa gets a character change out of this, because she kind of looks lost. But I mean, as you say, if Braun loses, what the hell does he do next? I mean, it appears he's playing a new character now that's super evil. So can he then revert to the old Braun Strowman or not? And Fiend really feels like hasn't really played much of a part in the hype for this match. A lot of it's been on Braun. And, you know, you go back like a year ago with The Fiend and think of, you know, how over he was. And I know these were different circumstances and crowds were different and everything, but go back to that SummerSlam debut last year, Kenny, against Finn Balor. I mean, it was just like, it was the highlight of SummerSlam for me. Mm-hmm. And it just feels like The Fiend has, I don't know, it just feels like he's kind of lost his way to me. He's not that sort of strong, powerful, dynamic character that he was. And it's not that the character's run out of steam. I think there's still loads more they can do with this. It's ever since they had that swamp fight, it's all just felt very muddled to me, like they haven't really known where they're going with this whole thing. I mean, there's not really been any sort of acknowledgement of what happened to Braun after the swamp fight. That wasn't really brought up again, was it?
No, it's never been explained.
I mean, I suppose we're supposed to assume that he's gone mad as a result of that, and that has been, you know, the cause and effect here, which is understandable, but that hasn't really been mentioned. And I think that should have been, because that was supposedly such a big part of the story between these two, and now just feels like it didn't really matter. So, yeah, I don't really know. I'm having a hard time with this one, Kenny. I hope they restore my faith on Sunday. I fear they won't, but you know what? I hope I'm wrong again, Kenny.
And I hope that, I hope The Fiend gets the belt on Sunday, but we'll see. Well, let's move on to Raw. Lots of stuff happening on Raw as well.
Oh, and there's just a couple more things I'd just like to mention on SmackDown, if I can. Kalisto returned. Big news.
Great.
Yeah, so Kalisto returned. Shorty G ended up apologizing to Matt Riddle. He said he was embarrassed by his behavior last week when he was trying to collect on the King's ransom. You know, Shorty says he's remorseful, he's contrite. And then suddenly King Corbin turns up and flattens Riddle from behind. And kind of the implication is that Corbin and Shorty are working together, but Shorty from his body language didn't communicate that to us. So there's a story there. It's not very interesting. Also, Big E and John Morrison, they ended up having the match late on the show, and Big E won that by submission. The Retribution guys turned up and ended up smashing up the locker room. At this point, all the wrestlers have gone to the ring. They're surrounded the ring, vacated the locker room, figuring that the Retribution guys would again try and disrupt and interrupt the match. They didn't. They went in the locker room, smashed that up, and then they left. So Big E won that match over John Morrison by submission. And then afterwards, Sheamus, who's definitely still a heel, because there was some confusion last week as to whether or not Sheamus had turned, he's definitely still a heel. He'd been obnoxious to Big E earlier backstage. And then after this match, he ended up bro-kicking Big E. So I just thought I would bring that up, Kenny, just to tie up a few loose ends there.
You know, that is fair. That is fair. And so Sheamus hasn't turned heel, and Shorty G, I mean, God, can we just get rid of Shorty G, please? That gimmick. It just, heel babyface, you could be, it does not matter. It's garbage. It's so bad.
I mean, the way out of this for Shorty G is for him to disappear and then resurface as a member of Retribution. And I know this is kind of like the Nexus, but it's 10 years on, so who cares? Shorty G can then reveal that he was the leader of Retribution all along, and he's so mad about the way he's been presented as a total dweeb. I mean, that is one way that they can try and make this Retribution thing work and give Shorty G a new lease of life, because this character is, I mean, he's just flatlined, you know? I mean, yeah, everyone knows that. It's not news, is it?
That would be a very believable way to do it. On Raw, they did a lot of stuff on this show with glitches and stuff for Retribution. A lot of people can complain about it. It didn't really work for me that well, but it is what it is. One of the big stories on Raw was the return of Mickey James, which had been, you know, touted as a big thing, and I just couldn't believe how much they made her return mean absolutely nothing. They didn't have her ring entrance. They had Seth Rollins and Murphy come out during the match. We watched an argument with Seth Rollins and Murphy and Samoa Joe, who seems to be turning into just Joe with the gossip in the locker room. And in the end, Natalia...
That's a blast from the past.
I know, just Joe. And then Natalia knocks Mickey James off the apron and she gets counted out. I mean, she's a six-time women's champion. I mean, this was just I can't think of a way that her return could have been presented worse than this.
No, it is hard to imagine how it could have been worse. It was extraordinarily feeble. There's no doubt about that. She's just in the ring, has a match with Natalya, which, you know, the match wasn't very good. It wasn't going to be. And as you say, Seth Rollins and Murphy came out to interrogate Samoa Joe at the desk as to how Samoa Joe knew that Rey Mysterio was going to be there that night. So the camera was really focused more on Rollins and Joe than it was on Natalya and Mickie James. I thought the match was between the two was, I mean, of course it had no chance, but I mean, it wasn't going to be any good anyway. James ended up being counted out. What was amusing was seeing Natalya's celebration after winning by count out. That did amuse me. I mean, it's as if she just won a gold medal.
The closest she's going to get.
And then afterwards, Lana's filming her on a phone, and then Mickie James ends up clobbering Lana and then leaving, and that was that. But you're right, it was probably one of the most useless things on the program, and there was quite a few useless segments on this show. It did have competition.
Yeah, this is not the way you want to have her return. We did have Apollo Crews beat Shelton Benjamin in a match which was set up that if Apollo wins, MVP can't have Lashley or Benjamin at ringside in his US title match. So Apollo gets the win, and then later on the show we got an elimination six-man tag match that had the Hurt Business taking on Ricochet, Mustafa Ali, and Apollo Crews. I've got to say, like, the Hurt Business I thought on this show were pretty good. I thought they worked really well. Crews was okay, but like, I've got to say, like, Mustafa Ali, Ricochet, and Cedric Alexander throughout the night, they kind of grated on my nerves. Like, what whether was it was that? The... Well, because, you know, when they came back from the opening promo that Drew McIntyre had when the glitches happened, they were all like... And then Seth Rollins turned up to kind of talk to Drew. They were kind of doing the like, oh, and just doing all these weird noises. Just little geeks. And then when the more the show was going on, I was just going, these guys are just... Ricochet is such a good wrestler, and in NXT he was such a big deal, and he just feels like a jobber now. Ali returned 2 weeks ago. He's now been reduced to sort of backstage segments where, you know, him and Alexander and Ricochet are just, you know, the backup for Apollo Crews against the Hurt Business. They just kind of feel like nothing. And then Cedric Alexander, he was acting like when he won the 24/7 title that he just won a gold medal at the Olympics.
I don't think it was quite as big as Natalya's celebration.
Well, that's true. But I mean, look, Natalya's not won something in a long time. Give her some credit. but you know, because and then Benjamin, was Benjamin not pinned 3 times on this show as well?
I think he did end up. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it was. Yeah, with that elimination match. I mean, I hate it when they do these elimination matches and don't give them enough time. And, like, Lashley easily pinned Ali. I mean, like, remember when he returned a few weeks back and had that really good showing and looked like a somebody? Mm-hmm. And, like, he just looked like a nobody here. And then Benjamin pinned Ricochet. He just looked like a glorified jobber. And then you're right, Crews then made a comeback. He's 1-on-3. Crews pins Benjamin. Again, you know, Benjamin didn't really pull up that much resistance. Crews pinned MVP. And then Lashley ended up pinning Crews to win the match. It did seem a bit pointless, really, to me, the whole elimination match, especially after we had the Apollo Crews Benjamin match earlier, where if Crews won, as you said, where if Crews won the match, then Benjamin and Lashley would have to watch the Crews versus MVP match at SummerSlam from catering, so they would not be allowed to interfere, and they agreed to that. And obviously, they're men of their word. So they're not going to break that. That's a solemn pledge.
Word is their bond.
We know as heels they would not break that pledge that they've made to Apollo Crews. So yeah, it just all felt like a big rush. And then also, yeah, Shelton Benjamin in the end regained the 24/7 title from Cedric, didn't he? So at least he did come out a winner in the end.
Yeah, but he got pinned by... He got pinned... Because he lost the title. Did he not lose the title twice before he won it back? See, the fact that I watched this today and I am confused. is not a great sign for what happened.
Oh, hang on a minute. We were talking about titles earlier, Kenny. We forgot about the 24/7 title.
Burn it in a bin immediately.
How could we forget about this championship? And it a completely faded, slipped from memory. This title just needs to go.
I honestly think, and I'm not just saying this, I think the FTW title has more prestige than the 24/7 title. Legit. Oh. Because at least the FTW, the 24/7 title has just been, it's a jobber belt, everybody's won it. And then you've got guys like Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander who have to act like it's been some amazing feat that they've won it. And it's like, everybody's won it. There's like Fox Sports presenters who've won it. Gronk's won it. I'm sure if you'd been allowed to go over from COVID, Finn, you would have won it.
Probably, yeah. Would have been the highlight of my... Would have been the pinnacle of my life.
Can you imagine that on your tombstone? It's not, you know, created a power slam. It's 24/7 champion.
But I mean, I think it's the only way that this belt can be saved and have any useful purpose, give it to Natalya. Why not? I mean, you know, this is obviously, if this is a new comedy character that she's playing where she's celebrating every crappy win, just give her that belt. It's utterly worthless. You're right. Everyone who wins it, it devalues them. They look like jobbers as a result. And like it changes hands so often that no one can keep track of who's the champion. So that belt, yeah, let's just, an addendum, let's tack this on to the podcast that from the item earlier. This belt just needs to be melted down and just, you know, chucked in the metal section at the tip, you know, the local recycling place.
For sure. So, we did also find out on this show that it was Zelina Vega who was behind the poisoning of Montez Ford. We find out because apparently WWE had upped their security footage because of Retribution, and we saw the footage that showed that it was indeed Zelina who poisoned Montez Ford. I mean, I'd be getting the police involved at this point if she's been doing that.
Have you noticed that they use the word poisoned, not drugged? That's very deliberate, hasn't it?
Yeah, he was poisoned and then sent to a local medical facility.
Yeah, that's it, because no one in wrestling uses drugs. No one! He was poisoned by the evil Zelina.
We'll move on from that. So Sasha and Bayley, the women's tag champs, took on Asuka and Shayna Baszler in a non-title match, obviously setting up kind of what had happened on SmackDown. And I like the idea that Asuka and Shayna were fighting the common enemy, but really they want to fight each other as well. And in the end, when Asuka was taking out Banks on the outside, Baszler puts the Kira for the clutch on Bayley, gets a submission win. So one's got to assume that maybe Asuka and Shayna are going to be the two that take on Sasha and Bayley at Payback on
30th, isn't it?
August 30th. August 30th. And we also, during the match, got Nia Jax came out. She ended up punching through the plexiglass to Shayna Baszler, Pat Buck's out there in the most hideous suit I've ever seen a man wear in my adult life. And, you know, they're fighting. So I thought the tag match was pretty hot. And again, the women's storyline on Raw seems to be one of the best things WWE is doing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I mean, we should also mention as well that prior to this match, Bayley offered to face Asuka first at SummerSlam so that when Banks faced Asuka, she wouldn't have to break a sweat in the defense of her championship.
Karen's so selfless, isn't she?
It's exactly, yeah. I mean, you know, at least that was brought up. So then, as you say, Bayley and Banks faced Asuka and Shayna. Nia Jax returned from suspension. Then Shayna and Nia fought through the crowd, leaving Banks and Bayley against Asuka. So things were looking pretty grim for Asuka for a while in this match. Then Shayna returned. And Baszler ended up forcing Bayley to tap out while Asuka held Banks in the Asuka lock at ringside. So it seemed to be a very commanding performance by Baszler and Asuka here. I mean, booking 101. This is just, you know, what you do is the challenger, of course, defeats the champion in the non-title match in the match prior to the pay-per-view. So it all made sense to me, this. And again, it kind of feels like they're thinking ahead as well to Payback. It would seem logical that Asuka and Baszler will team up to face Banks and Bayley at the Payback event. I think it would be quite interesting if Baszler and Asuka won the tag team title and were like, you know, reluctant partners. I mean, they've done this before, but I always think there's a lot they can do with it. And sometimes when they do it, they don't really let it sort of fulfill its potential. And I think Baszler and Asuka could be quite an interesting unit together. I think those two could do really well as champs. So if Asuka doesn't win one of the singles titles at SummerSlam, I'm hoping that Shayna and Asuka win the tag title at Payback.
We also had on the show another Raw Underground, where we saw Dolph Ziggler get a win over Eric. No, yes. Ivar. Eric.
No, Eric. Eric.
It was over Eric. He got a win over Eric. We then later on saw the horsewomen, Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafir. They turned up and went in there with Shayna Baszler, and then Marina Shafir beat somebody in Raw Underground before Nia Jax came out and attacked, and then, you know, basically squared up to Shayna Baszler, but then ran away. How did Raw Underground do for you on this, its third week?
I mean, I'm just bored to death with it, Kenny. It just needs to go, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I don't see what useful purpose it's going to serve in the long run.
I guess we need to give them credit. We did say last week, you know, look at Eric, he's just back doing nothing. They did bring him back to Raw Underground this week, but then again, they did have him get beat by Dolph Ziggler, so maybe he should just stay away from Raw Underground.
I mean, it's just absolute garbage. So, I mean, they mentioned it maybe once on commentary during the show, but there was no, like, highlights or clips of it until at any point in the first 2 hours of the show, from what I can recall. And then Shane McMahon turned up at the door and, yay, it's on, and Eric beats someone up, and then Dolph Ziggler is watching with Shane McMahon from ringside, and then Eric's, you know, entered this commanding performance, but Dolph Ziggler, the villain, the heel, the cocky bad guy, he's decidedly unimpressed by Eric's performance. And then that leads to Eric versus Ziggler. And then Dolph, I mean, I know he kind of cheated in the match, but I mean, Dolph won that far too easily, I felt, which undid, you know, all any sort of gains that Eric had made by winning the match. So that just baffled me. And then we went back to it, as you said. I mean, I guess with Shayna and Jessamyn and Marina, and then Nia Jax doing a runner rather than fighting Baszler. I suppose that did advance their story a little bit, but I'm not really interested in Shayna versus Nia. To me, it's Shayna and Asuka versus Bayley and Sasha Banks. That, to me, is far more interesting to me than Shayna versus Nia Jax. I don't really see what that can really achieve. So, I mean, I guess it gave Jessamyn Duke and Marina Shafir something to do on Raw. I think this was their, I mean, I know they've been in the crowd and they have been visible on camera before, but I think this was their prop first sort of, this was their like Raw debut, I believe it was.
It was the Raw debut, yeah. So, yeah. And I hope that they stay with Baszler because I think they're a good addition to her act.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't know how they're doing these days. I mean, I know when they were on NXT before it went on the USA Network, you're like, these two are not ready for NXT. So, I mean, I'm hoping they've both improved as pro wrestlers. I mean, we know they can, you know, obviously they've got the MMA background and everything, so they can do this sort of thing. But, I mean, long-term, they've got to be able to do it in the ring in order, you know, for them to really have any value and contribute anything to WWE. So, yeah, Nia ended up basically fleeing, and Shane McMahon said, well, the only rule here is that you have to fight. And Nia broke that rule. So, I mean, what a villain. What a heel. Yeah, there was one more thing on Raw Underground. It was Who Asked versus Riddick Moss, and they fought to a stalemate. So that was the only thing that Raw Underground contributed to this week's episode.
I mean, Shane McMahon did say it's going to be back next week, so we are still going to see more of it. But yeah, it feels like it's on its way out. Although I would like to see Sonya Deville in it, as I say. Another thing on Raw that I thought was worth bringing up is we did have on the show Rey Mysterio coming out with Dominic. He said he's going to be in his corner at SummerSlam. And we ended up seeing Rollins getting kendo-sticked by both Mysterios. How do you feel about the match now that we've kind of had the final build to it? We're going to have Murphy and Rey in the corners, and we're going to have Dominic against Rollins in a street fight stipulation that's been added.
I mean, Rey needs to be there, of course, and I think he will be. He's obviously a valuable addition to the match. You would think that maybe, is Dom going to, you know, you'll never see it coming. Is Dom going to join forces with Seth and Murphy here? I don't really see where this goes if we don't have a monumental storyline development of that nature here. It all kind of feels like it's for naught. you look at the two outcomes, say Dominic wins, then that doesn't really do a whole lot for Seth Rollins. If Rollins wins, does that then lead to another Rollins-Mysterio Rey Mysterio match? I don't think anyone really needs to see another match between those two. I think we're going to. I mean, I can understand how Rollins and Dominic, that can be a match against Rey Mysterio and another wrestler. That can work. But if Dominic Mysterio doesn't join forces with Seth Rollins here, I don't really see where this story goes.
So it feels like, for me, what we're going to see at SummerSlam is Seth Rollins is going to win, and then we'll see a follow-up at Payback, which might give us the turn.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly. I think Rollins is going to endure a lot of punishment. I think even if Dominic loses, as long as he really lays into Rollins and gives him an absolute beating, I think people will be satisfied, and they'll feel like he's exacted a little bit of vengeance for the beating on last week's Raw by Rollins and Murphy. I mean, I'm not sure when Ray's going to be back in the ring. They are saying that they've definitely given us a strong indication that he will return to action. So that's going to lead to some sort of match between Ray and Rollins in future. But I mean, without Dominic as part of that, I don't really see how there's going to be much interest in it, because we've already seen Ray and Rollins wrestle so many times. And how can they really, I was going to say, how can they top that I versus I stipulation? I mean, how could they do any worse than that stipulation? I think it's more the question, isn't it? So, and this is one of the matches, this is probably the match that I'm least looking forward to at SummerSlam. I just really feel like it's hard for me to get really excited about it. And I feel bad saying that, because Dominic Mysterio took such a beating last week on Raw in order to try and get this story and this match over. And it sort of had the opposite effect on me. I didn't really like seeing him take that much punishment. Because to me, in pro wrestling, you shouldn't really be taking that much punishment. Because it's, let's face it, it's supposed to be a work, you know. It really did beat the hell out of him. So, yeah. What do you think of it all, Kenny?
I think they've done a good job with the story. I think that Dominic has shown a lot of fire. So I'm looking forward to the match. And the street fight gives it some kind of, you know, shortcuts they can take. Ray being out there, as you say, is crucial. And I've got high hopes for it. I think this is like a big SummerSlam-style match. And the fact they've got me to a point where I'm looking forward to Dominic being a one-on-one match is a kind of a testament that they've done a good job with it. So, fair play to them. Now, the main event segment of Raw was Shawn Michaels coming out to sort of, talk about what had happened to Ric Flair. And he comes out and he talks about, you know, how Flair was lying in his deathbed for the 31 days and how bad that was for everyone else. And lists off all these people. There'd be none of them if it wasn't for Ric Flair. And he wants justice to meet Orton at SummerSlam. And then as Shawn goes to leave, Randy Orton enters and does an RKO and then kicks Michaels in the head with a punt to the head and then flees. Drew McIntyre comes out. Now before we talk, and then basically Drew and Orton have a scuffle. Orton drops Drew with an RKO and then the music plays as we kind of go off there. But oh dear Lord, Shawn Michaels' hair. Man alive.
Yeah.
What happened?
I mean, it's the stress of running NXT, Kenny. That's what it is.
Oh, I mean, and it, somebody had put a thing on Twitter where they said, like, it almost felt quite cruel that somebody did like a camera angle from behind him when he was down in the corner.
Yeah.
Keep the baseball cap on. It's just...
Yeah,
it's,
just keep it on. I mean, it's just like he's allowed it to grow back. And there's a lot of missing pieces, isn't there, in that hairline?
It has not grown back fully, unfortunately. You
know, if this was a 1,000-piece jigsaw, I mean, you know, 750 pieces would be missing, wouldn't they?
I mean,
I thought Michaels did a good job here in this angle. I mean, he always really projects such realism, I feel, especially now because there's so much in progress and he's totally unrealistic. And I think when Michaels comes out there and really speaks, you can believe him. Orton was bound to do the run-in and drop Shawn with the RKO, and I thought that looked really good. And Michaels, of course, sold it better than anyone sells anything in pro wrestling. I mean, you know, go over to AEW. I mean, they needed Ricky Morton to do some selling on last week's Dynamite. I think anyone else sold anything all night. Oh, no. MGF did, didn't he, when John Moxley beat
him? MGF sold the Paradigm Shift, and then Ricky Morton's sell of the Spike Piledriver was a thing to behold.
Yes, it was indeed. So, you know, we could rely on the veterans, the veteran tag team guys, you know, the veterans to show how it's done when it comes to selling. So I thought he did really well there. And then Drew McIntyre ran to the ring and he's like, sorry, Sean, you know, I should have seen this coming, you know, but you'll never see it coming. So Drew's there and he beat Randy up and seemed to actually be really laying Randy Orton out a little bit too easily. And I'm thinking Randy has to have a comeback here. Got to have a comeback. And sure enough, he did. Hits the RKO. Randy retreats. You know, we get the close-ups there. And the question is, will Randy Orton capture his 14th title at SummerSlam? So that was how they left us. I thought this was well done. I mean, are you thinking, Kenny, that Orton's going to capture his 14th title at SummerSlam?
It's starting to go into my brain that might be what happens. But do you know what? I think the story's been great, and I think that there's a way to tell the story that if Drew does lose, he, you know, the road to getting it back. And, you know, even that Kevin Dunn thing that I read it earlier on where he said, when the big stars like Drew McIntyre, you know, so they see him as a big star. So yes, this doesn't feel like it's one of those, you know, oh, when he loses it, that's going to be it. He'll never have it again. So I'm just kind of willing to go with the story. I think the Orton Drew story has been great. I think it's been one of the best things on Raw. And I think Drew and Orton is the match I'm looking forward to the most at SummerSlam, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that match as well. And one thing that's really fallen in Drew's favour this year is that even though ratings have gone down to record low levels, or at least they did do last month, I think this week's number will be slightly above that, is that no, I haven't seen too many people blaming Drew McIntyre. Have you seen many people trying to pin this one on Drew?
No, nobody. And that's it. I mean, look, wrestling fans are the first to blame it on somebody if they don't like them. So I think it's a good sign for Drew that people outside of Scotland are feeling similar the way that we do here.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, last year when Kofi was champ, there was lots of people saying this guy's been an absolute flop as champion. And even though ratings have been at the lowest level ever, I don't think I've seen anyone blame Drew McIntyre for it. So that does bode very well for his future. And I don't get the sense from WWE that they see him as somebody who has failed in the role. I think they see him as somebody who has done a really good job under very challenging circumstances. And I think that's how I can speak for both of us when I say that's how the Power Slam podcast feels as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I mean, I'm looking forward to this match. I think they both really want to deliver something special on Sunday. And that's really a nice feeling to have as a fan or a follower of pro wrestling.
So just very quickly, just to interrupt, I think the thing that I'm happy about for them, for Orton and Drew, who arguably are the two male wrestlers who have killed it the most since WrestleMania, are going to get to do this at SummerSlam with all this new stuff. You know, with the LEDs and the virtual fans and all that. So it's going to feel more epic than it would have if it was just in the PC. Or as you so eloquently put it earlier on, in the shed.
Exactly. So, I mean, to me, I feel like McIntyre and Orton want to go out there at SummerSlam and have the best match of their lives. I'm not saying they will, but I think that's how they're approaching this. And when you have that confidence in wrestlers that they want to go out there and deliver something really special, that's how you can really get behind them. And you're willing them to succeed. You know, you want them to do well. And I think they're both going to do really well on Sunday. And it doesn't really matter to me who wins. I think I kind of would like to see Orton win the title because I think it would add more fuel to the story between these two. I don't think they can get away with doing a non-finish. I think there's got to be a finish. Someone has got to be pinned. And I think I'd like to see Orton win that belt. And possibly, maybe Ric Flair will be there, Kenny.
You never know.
Maybe the whole thing with Rick and Randy Orton was a ruse, and Orton didn't really nail Ric Flair low and he just sold it. And then there was no punt to the head. I mean, we didn't see it because the lights went out. Maybe Ric Flair will come out and he'll cost Drew McIntyre the match.
There is something kind of, you know, the idea that, Ric Flair, the dirtiest player in the game, is willing to use his own mortality to help his guy win. There is kind of something that makes that feel that is what would happen.
I think that is a distinct possibility that Ric Flair will be involved in the finish of this match. It will conform to the, you know, you never see coming tagline. I think it will protect Drew. You've then got Randy and Rick as, you know, a unit. It gives Ric Flair something else to do, potentially sets up something with Charlotte when she returns. I mean, there's a lot of mileage in that. You know, I've got to say, you know, for a long time, I didn't want to see Ric Flair on TV because he was a guy hogging the spotlight. And I don't feel like he's that guy anymore. You know, I can believe what he said last week, that he is more about putting other people over. So I'm on for Rick coming back and being Randy's manager. So I'm hoping that's the outcome at SummerSlam, and that sequence of events leads to a title change and Randy's 14th championship.
Well, we will see where it goes. But listen, that's all the time we've got for the main podcast. We will be doing, obviously, a look at issue 145 of Power Slam over on the Overrun. If any of you any plugs for us?
No, I don't think I have. How about yourself, Billy?
Very hesitantly, you don't have any.
Well, I mean, maybe. Well, I'll say no more. I'll say no more at this moment in time.
We might have more to talk about next week, I think, is what
yes,
you're saying.
Yes, I think we might have.
Yeah, there might be something to talk about then. Anyway, you can go to Patreon. It really does mean a lot when you support us in this time, with everything going on, no live events. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. Loads of bonus stuff. There will be even more bonus stuff going up in September. I will say no more. Also, YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes. Got loads of content going up there. We've got Bret Hart talking about the original plan for SummerSlam 92, involving Shawn Michaels. And we've also got a clip up with Mick Foley talking about the Buried Alive match with The Undertaker back in 1996. So do check those out. We hope that you'll continue to support us. Finn, I hope you enjoy the rest of your week and enjoy SummerSlam, more importantly.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Lots going on this weekend with TakeOver and SummerSlam. And yeah, it's going to be a big weekend. I think we're going to have plenty to talk about next week, aren't we, Kenny?
I think we will. Another long episode. Lots to discuss. Thanks for this, everybody, and we'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.